Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club. And get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
From Backpage, I'm Neil White, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter. This is a follow-on from one of our monthly Q&A shows. We got so many great questions from our socios at patreon.com/Graham Hunter, but one in particular sparked so much debate that we thought we would separate it out to this special show. So thank you, first of all, to Merin Myrtle, our socio Merin Myrtle, who sent in the following question. Do you think time has brought or will bring more respect to Madrid's three-peat team? I've never forgiven one journalist, no names here, for saying they didn't deserve to be the team that held that record because they played awful football. I think people criticised them for not being what they expected, a smooth, dominant machine, and it blinded them to their strengths, their adaptability, their ability to absorb pressure before striking. They were criticised for not being a Pep Guardiola team when they should have been looked at as a gritty Sir Alex Ferguson type. As a fan, I feel like that team was oddly misunderstood. So for the next wee while, Graham Hunter, our host for The Big Interview, and Pete Jensen, our special guest for these Q&A shows, are going to see what they think of Merin's proposition there. And Pete, if I can start with you, what do you think the general public perception of that team, Zidane's Madrid team that won three consecutive Champions League titles, is, if we family fortuned this and asked 100 viewers, what do you think they would say about that team?
I think she's right that they're not seen in the same light, even as the Barcelona team that only won two out of the three years. It didn't repeat the feat of, you know, winning three on the bounce. But I'd argue that in many ways it's the club's fault. It's Real Madrid's fault, because they didn't seem to value it either. I mean, whenever there's talk of Zinedine Zidane being three jobs from the sack, no one at Real Madrid ever comes out and says, are you serious? This man's unsackable. He goes when he wants to go. He won three Champions Leagues on the bounce. Cristiano Ronaldo was never really properly appreciated by the supporters in the Santiago Bernabeu. They were still singing Ronaldo's name at Old Trafford long after he'd gone. They barely sung it at the Bernabeu when he was at the club. And to not just put the blame on the supporters and on the club, you could also put it on the players themselves, because on the night in Kiev when they make it 3 out of 3, and all the post-match interviews should have been the players talking about this incredible achievement, what did you get? You got Cristiano Ronaldo saying I'm going to leave and completely rewriting all the headlines and setting a new agenda for Zidane's press conference, which Zidane wasn't very happy about. And then the next person interviewed after Ronaldo is Bale, and Bale also says, if I'm not in the team more, I'm going to leave. So in many ways, it's the club's own fault. They didn't make of it what they should have made of it, this incredible achievement of winning three straight European Cups.
Real Madrid seemed to me to be such a polemic team. I'm not certain that Barcelona inspire quite... The division that Barcelona, particularly the modern Barcelona, inspire is of a different nature. And there, if we survey 100 years, there's so many people that think that Madrid are pompous and arrogant. There are so many who think that they still get state favours and therefore that's why they're winning. There are a lot of people who don't necessarily appreciate Florentino Perez, and this wouldn't be a worldwide point of view, but domestically there's still an awful lot of stuff said about them. Well, they get the rub of the green with every refereeing decision, which isn't true. And I think that bleeds into, these aren't the main themes to answer Meron's point about appreciation of Real Madrid. And we're about to go into more deeply why it might be that the three-peat is an unloved child, if it is. But I think what I liked most about what Meron said was perception, because there is a perception that somehow they stumbled their way to all three of them. By the time they come to the first of the three-peat, they've been awful for half a season. Absolutely awful. They've got Rafa Benitez in. It's been a bad appointment because it's not working for him. It's not working for the fans. It's not working for the club. It's not working for the media. They get pumped 4-0 by Barcelona at home, and they're getting roasted so badly by their own fans that the stadium announcer gets a message from Rafa Benitez. A little bit like Doc Cotton in Line of Duty. It's like, urgent removal needed, and the volume of the PA goes up, and you get Slade and Kylie Minogue played at you know, ear-shattering volumes so that the TV broadcast can't carry the Florentino Dimission chants. And the end of that season, they win the Champions League. So the ability to take that first step in the most ridiculous circumstances and then do it again twice more. That's where I want to link with Meron and say that I will go to the end of my career defending that is an extraordinary achievement in personal terms. There's not massive alteration of the squad. It's Zidane the coach each time. There are blips. They're not unblemished, any of the three triumphs. But I massively agree that one, it's underappreciated and underestimated. And two, I would strongly go on the front foot to be aggressively attacking people who want to talk it down. Say, oh, it's only Madrid, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, let's get into a little bit of detail. Can we start by doing a little bit of backpedaling to the start of this, all the summer of 2015? Rafa Benitez is the new manager of Real Madrid. Can you give maybe those amongst us whose memories have been pandemically fatigued and can't stretch back 6 years, what was the role of Zinedine Zidane? How would you best define it at Real Madrid around about that time? Because we're going to look at a squad that remains remarkably consistent, and even a team selection that remains remarkably consistent over these three Champions League seasons.
People know the French word for flippity gibbet. Over to you, Pete.
So this is what Zidane's doing when Benitez takes over.
The point is, he's a butterfly. He's a butterfly in that club, because at that stage, you'd agree with this, Pete. Pete, I think, spent more time nearer to Madrid in that era than I did. But if you caught a glimpse of Zidane, you know, one minute he'd be ambassador, the next minute he'd be sporting director, and he's directly responsible for a handful of signings. But probably the two key ones that you can talk about that Zidane becomes responsible for was when Isco is signed. Florentino goes in public
and says, well, there's no place for Isco in the starting 11 for my team. He says that in public. And Stan goes, listen, boss, sorry, sit down, shut up, give me your money. Isco's signed. And the other one is, again, recently I interviewed Varane through at Valdebebas, and he was like, you know, the queue of teams that wanted me from Lons was unbelievable. We all know that Manchester United were trying their butts off, but there was literally a 6-7 top team queue waiting for this breakthrough kid. And Zidane phoned him, and Varane crapped himself. He was like, sorry, can't speak to him, my homework, and hung up. Went and told his brother and said, Anthony, Stan's just, what did you say to him? He said, because I told him I couldn't speak. And Stan didn't take the huff and called him back the next day and said, listen, son, it's you. And that's a light-hearted way of pointing out that Zidane's first role was as what would you call, campaign icon, when Ramon Calderon was still the president and Florentino wanted to get back in. He had a photo op, I think in Morocco, where he was flanked by Ronaldo and by Zidane. And of course the Madrid papers were able to say the president's coming back. And in due course he won a very fraught and very noisy election, from which point Zidane became an ambassador for Real Madrid. Then he became sports director, then he became assistant coach in that Ancelotti setup, which is the 2014 season, right, Pete? Because there was Paul Klemp. You and I watched them. I mean, this isn't the season that's in question, Neil, so apologies about this, but you and I were at Espanyol Real Madrid one night, I think in the Cup. At any rate, it was mid-season, and it was Clement and Ancelotti. Clement stopped and had a brief word with us in the mix zone. It was just a time when, I'm sure under Ancelotti's idea rather than assistant coach Zidane's idea, they changed the side to put Di Maria back into midfield, and that meant that they could do Cristiano and Benzema and Bale up front. And that became a winning proposition, and Zidane was assistant coach. And in the big interview, Neil, you heard Paul Clement saying that on the lead up to the big day in Lisbon against Atleti, Zidane had a specific role that was completely handed to him by Ancelotti. So by the time we come to the potential for by the time we come to Benitez, before there's a switch mid-season, Zidane is would largely be regarded as somebody who was, irrespective of job title, which at that stage was pretty much sporting director, he was a resource. He was like the Gollum's ring, you know, for Florentino. If there's a bit of a tough time going on, reach for the ring. Where's Zizou? Counsel, knowledge, contacts, presence, iconic status, all of these things. That's as Stevie Wonder would say, that's what Zizou means to me.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In
during that summer of 2015, there's some really serious business done that's going to affect all three parts of this story. They activate the buyback clause in Casemiro's contract at Porto. Carvajal is extended. Ramos is extended. Pepe is extended. And although he's been here for a year, this is also the summer that Keylor Navas takes his sort of first steps towards being the immovable goalkeeper for this three-peat. Do you associate all of that business? Like, how much of that do you think Zidane's fingerprints are on? What level of kind of authorship has he got, not just on the games, but on that kind of construction of the team?
I think you have to remember that the team did need to be reconstructed after after they won it in 2014, because Florentino Perez, in his wisdom, decided to pretty much rip that team up. I mean, any other club in the world, after winning the Champions League against against Atletico Madrid as they did, and in such style, 4-1, everyone would have pretty much stayed, with the exception maybe of Xabi Alonso, who decided to move on. But Di Maria, who'd been man of the match in the final, wanted a pay rise. Florentino wasn't having any of that, so he was sold to Manchester United. And it did seem that it was pretty much a case of Florentino sitting down, armchair, remote control in hand, watching the World Cup and picking out the best players. So they signed Toni Kroos, who had a brilliant tournament. Keylor Navas was already very much on the radar because he'd been pretty much the best goalkeeper that season in La Liga, but he did have a very good World Cup as well. And James Rodriguez scored that fantastic goal against Uruguay. So James Rodriguez comes in and they lose Di Maria, and Graham's already touched on this. Di Maria's legs were what made the 4-3-3 work. You know, you only get away with playing Bale, Benzema and Ronaldo, that really top-heavy team, if you've got people that work in midfield, and the work that Di Maria put in, and it was never more so evident as in the final. But he then goes. So Ancelotti the following season has a difficult job on his hands, because he then has to try and make James Rodriguez the midfielder that Di Maria was, and it wasn't possible. Casemiro at this point is out at Porto on loan, impressing for Julian Lopetegui. How much credit should we give Zidane for the fact that Casemiro came back? I think it was a bit of a no-brainer, really. Yarramendi hadn't worked out. Yarramendi was signed for 38 million from Real Sociedad, one of the most bizarre signings in Real Madrid's recent history. Never looked like a Real Madrid player. And you know, he'd come to the end of his two-season spell. He went back to Real Sociedad. Xabi gone, as we say. So they needed somebody to play in that holding midfield position. And Casemiro had done it brilliantly for Lopetegui. So I think to give Zidane credit for that, or even to give him credit for the fact that Ramos gets a new deal or Carvajal gets a new deal. And as you say, Keylor Navas was there, but he very much becomes number one. So I'm not too sure that we can say the team that wins the first of those Champions Leagues and then remains pretty much through the three-peat is a team built by Zidane.
So the team that wins the first final, they've gone through Roma in the round of 16. They have a very tough and dramatic quarterfinal against Wolfsburg. In the semi-final, they have a fairly turgid two ties against Pellegrini's Manchester City, and the final's a repeat of Lisbon.
And the City game, it's there for the taking. Manchester City have got a 0-0 in the first leg at home. They come to the Bernabeu. It's a magnificent chance for Pellegrini to be the first coach to take Manchester City to a Champions League final. And on the night, they just freeze, and Gareth Bale gets the goal. It's not given to him. It's one of those ridiculous own goals where it really should be given to the attacking player, and it isn't given to him. But they squeeze through 1-0. But, you know, that is one of the many, you know, the tennis ball on the top of the net and which way will it fall moments. But, you know, they get through it.
Well, I like this idea of the tennis ball on top of the net. And I think this is one of the knocks on this Madrid team, which is that a lot of the time they get the break on small margins. And that's definitely one. You know, you could even point to the fact that by and large, they avoid serious injuries, especially at the business end of the season during these 3 years, which is why they have the consistency of selection when other teams around them don't. I mean, once we get to the final of that first year, just that one game has got two or three moments where if the tennis ball lands on the other side of the net, the story is completely different. Graham?
I think that season, I think it's the least impressive of their three wins in football terms, but there's an argument that it's the most impressive pound for pound, because they're not particularly good in the group stage. And I think it gets interesting. In Rome, they play really well. In my opinion, that was a classic European performance. When they go to Rome, they win 2-0. Zidane's been in charge for, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks. The team looked completely different. They pulverise Rome. They play on the break. They mix those two styles. And once they pinch their goals, there's no question that they're going to win. By the time the return comes, I think it's an example, and there are several in this season, of why people call us slightly stained. Because at home, while they win 2-0, they can go out. Spalletti's team is so clever on the break. Salah is through one-on-one maybe four times, doesn't score. And they get the business done. My notes that I've taken here say Cristiano and James score the goal. My memory tells me, I was working on that game, that Roma had understood them, had known how to play against them on the break, that Roma did with a full stadium and 2-0 up. We're like, right, here's where we show our pomp. This is where we answer our fans about always demolishing and scoring. And Roma were like, bosh, okay, off the ring, bosh again. And that was one where, you know, the aggregate says 4-0. But really, it should be about, you know, 4-3, 4-4. But it wasn't. And in Wolfsburg, if you look at that game, they were atrocious. That wasn't like, ah, don't worry, this is one of Europe's big sides, and home leg, they'll tonk them. Wolfsburg outran them, outworked them, and Real Madrid looked disjointed, disinterested. They weren't really at it. It was a poor Wolfsburg side. I mean, genuinely not very impressive team. And the margin could have been higher, but the performance margin was ugly, really ugly. And so in the return leg, Wolfsburg don't show up. And it's rare in the Champions League that you get that anymore. There's been a homogenisation of the majority of teams that play in the Champions League. Not the elite ones, but the ones that crop up again and again and again. They've become braver. They've got better study tools. Even the so-called slightly lesser teams play with bravery away from home, particularly playing on a side that thinks, you know, well, we need to be pulverising, you know, fans are on a pattern, therefore there's gaps. All of that happened. Wolfsburg tick none of the boxes. And again, it'll go down in history as a Cristiano night, because I think he gets all three for the 3-2, I think. Yeah, okay. And again, those who wished to fuel Merin's anger will be able to do that off the home leg against Roma and the away leg against Wolfsburg. Which people want to say, footballers always say to us, yeah, but it's about who won. Critics, punters, particularly those who want to see, I am wowed by this side, I'm swept away by this side, will go, nah, I'm not happy because... And then you both said, I won't add to it, the two City games were just atrocious. You know, it's like wading through treacle porridge. It was just horrible. And then we come to Milan, and Pete, I don't know what you thought of the Milan triumph, but I can swear it was a good day out.
Well, let's talk about that final and some of those tennis balls, Pete. Because I mean, if ever a game kind of had this pendulum narrative, it was that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Griezmann penalty, isn't it? Griezmann scores his penalty, and Diego Simeone, you know, finally wins the Champions League with Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid, and the story becomes completely different. Graham, talking about the run up to that particular final, just rewind a little bit. It's amazing to think that shocking performance against Wolfsburg when they lose the first leg 2-0. The midfield that night is Modric, Kroos and Casemiro. So, you know, we're talking 2016, 5 years ago, and those three not being particularly effective against, you know, an average Bundesliga side. So how they've just gone on and got better and better and better. But anyway, back to the final. I thought Bale was terrific that night, right up to hobbling up to his penalty and scoring it. But as you say, Griezmann gets the penalty, scores the penalty, and it's a completely different story. And Atletico Madrid, I think I talked to the players and the memories that they have of that night, And I spoke to Felipe Luis recently, and he says, as they all say, they were better and they deserved to win. And that was the final that really hurt, because in the first one, they probably were outplayed, certainly outplayed in extra time. And it was little wonder that Simeone pretty much threw his hand in the press conference after the game and you know, said, I'm getting out of here. Of course, he backpedaled afterwards, but it was having come so close, and it was having had been better than Madrid and still lost.
Griezmann's penalty during the game comes back off the underside of the bar, but not in his favour. And then in the penalty shootout that decides that first final of the three-peat, Madrid are perfect from the spot, and number four for Atleti is Juanfran, and his penalty hits Navas's right hand post. So it's a game of fine margins.
But Griezmann, having scored in the shootout, you know, and so I interviewed him for Champions Journal and that, and he was like, you know, I win another six Champions League, you know, I win this season, which he didn't, with Barcelona. And he said, I'll never ever get rid of the pain of hitting the bar there. I don't know why I did it, blah blah blah. And I said, did it you know, take the spine out of your, what you call that, the stone out of your shoe, whatever we call it, and the thorn out of your side? He was like, no. As soon as the penalty went in, it wasn't relief. It was me asking myself, why didn't I score the first time? But Juanfran was not the person you wanted to miss that penalty. What a guy.
In terms of him being the person who didn't deserve to carry that around for the rest of his career, you mean? Yeah, I mean, it was, as we've said, it was the of the three Champions League successes, it was the most underwhelming run-up to the final, and then they could easily have been beaten in the final. But it's that durability, and it's Ronaldo always being there when he was needed, never more so than with the hat-trick against Wolfsburg. And Bale's contribution shouldn't be forgotten, because, you know, he did get the goal, even though UEFA didn't give it to him against City, and he was sensational in the final, even though he was on his last legs. And we know he's a player who, throughout his career, has never. People have always looked upon him as someone who certainly won't play through the pain barrier, but he can barely walk to the spot, and he manages to get there and roll it past the keeper.
If I'm not making this up, Carvajal goes off in tears, not just injured, but goes off in tears, and Lucas is to stand in. And Lucas, again, like, we won't spend a lot of time talking about Lucas across this, and I think by the time Cardiff comes along, I don't think Lucas even gets in the squad. But one of the things that categorises this era, this, you called it three-peat when you were calling us to arms, Neil, without question, Zidane has always been able to call on backup players, call on players that know they're not in his first 14, and almost without exception, he's created some kind of environment that's led us, you and I, to talk about him in previous Q&As, socio Q&As, where we didn't have the benefit of Pete's Majesty as a player whisperer. And he does do that. He doesn't charm every player. There are some who leave thinking that they haven't been given the best of relationships with him, including Bale. But broadly, he gets more out of the detritus in his squad than other managers do, and that's key in being able to win across three Champions Leagues.
That's all we have time for today. Come back on Thursday for the conclusion of our discussion on Real Madrid's three-peat. The Big Interview is a Backpage production, editing by Charles McGarry, music by Beer Jacket. Thank you for listening. There'll be more soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club, with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.